As if the Dow Jones or NASDAQ mean anything to most of us, yet the numbers keep being chanted as if showing God's favor or disappointment. Don't invest in stocks, but in people, those close to you in relationship, including yourself, as well as neighbors. This interest will compound and transform in ways obvious and surprising, restoring America one conversation at a time. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Zimone Perez, Pearl Stark, and Danielle Smith. The director of the evening news is Althea the Dance Machine Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nate Kapp.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and Oregon tradeswomen, presenting its 30th annual career fair. Employers, unions, and training programs will all be on hand with career path info. May 17th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the NECA IBEW Electrical Training Center. More information at oregontradeswomen.org/fair.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I have the pleasure to be joined in the studio today by Shisao Hata, artist and creative director of the Portland Assembly Center Project. She's here today to talk with me about the 10th annual Vanport Mosaic Festival, which kicks off this Friday. Welcome to the show, Shisao. How are you?
Thank you, Althea. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to come in to talk with us. It's very special, of course, to be at the decade mark of the Vanport Mosaic. For folks at home who might not know, what is this festival all about?
Well, this is our 10th anniversary, as you said, of the Vanport Mosaic, which started out of really wanting to know more about the community of Vanport, which is the community that lived between Vancouver and Portland. And there's a long history about that. There's more about it in this Oregon Humanities magazine. Their latest version is called Bloom. There's a great article about the history because we could take the whole time talking about that history. But it's a festival that starts this Friday and ends June 1st. And so there's just so many different activities going on. There's performances, there's different celebrations and screenings, there's some tours, particularly the Fair Housing Tour, which is a great tour about the history of Portland, what we call creative engagement, which includes placemaking, and there's exhibits that are located at the Alberta House, which is on 24th and Sumner in Northeast Portland, a beautiful old church building that's been redesigned, and there's just great things going on. There's also kind of the heart of what Vanport does with through the director, Laura Laforte, is called story harvesting. So that's to capture the stories and the history of people that not only lived in Vanport, but also the communities and the cultures that came out of Vanport. And so it really is an effort to kind of weave the city together, not just Vanport, but what we learn from Vanport into our larger city of Portland.
Vanport Mosaic was where I first heard about memory activism, which is something that, Vanport focuses on, and engaging with it in order to, you know, deepen ties and enrich people's lives as well. I'm curious, what got you involved or started with Vanport Mosaic? When did that happen?
I think it might have happened in the first or second year, actually. I was asked to interview a Japanese American who was housed at Vanport. And the story or the history is that, you know, many Japanese Americans lived in Nihonmachi or Japantown in Portland, about 10 blocks that existed in Old Town Portland. And then with the issuance of executive order, they were then sent to the Portland Assembly Center, along with, 15 other assembly centers that were built to hold people while the concentration camps were being built. And so then
this is
after
World War II,
mm-hmm. Right. And then after that, they went to Minidoka. And after that, they'd lost all their homes and lost all their businesses, and there weren't many options. So there's a big group of people that went to Vanport. And I ended up interviewing some people. And when I saw the interview, I like, somebody should go in depth in that story, not just of the Japanese Americans, but of Vanport. And so we did. I went up to the directors that right after that first showing and said, I'm going to do a reading about the history of the Japanese Americans. And we did. We developed it for 3 years. And then in 2019, we did a full 90-minute production called Gambatte, An American Legacy. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the second round. But I've done many, many projects with Vanport Mosaic as well.
Well, let's go into your project that is going on this year. You're the creative director of the Portland Assembly Project, and there's this performance coming up of We Are Still Here. That's going to be on June 1st at the Portland Expo Center. Talk to me about this performance. What is it going to entail? What can people expect?
So last year we started to work on this, what's called a reading, capturing the stories of people that actually were incarcerated in the assembly center. So that was where the Livestock Exposition Hall was, and there was about 4,000 people that were housed there. The stalls were turned into a little apartments. And so we did that reading last year, and then during the year following that, we talked with Residents Ensemble, who does a lot of social change work in their choral work, and we decided to do this project this year together. So on Saturday, May 31st, we're going to do kind of a premiere and dress rehearsal of the reading. And then on June 1st, it's going to be a combination of the choral ensemble with Residents Ensemble and the reading. And so that is called We Are Still Here. And it includes the project that we did last year called the Portland Assembly Center Project.
Okay, gotcha. Right now, I think it's especially poignant to be engaging with and remembering the history of the incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II, because the federal act that made that possible is now being brought up again, the Alien Enemies Act. With that added context, what does that bring up for you and for your work?
Well, I've been involved in looking at the history of Japanese Americans, not only in Oregon, but in the country, but particularly on the West Coast, since the late 70s. And so it's been like an ongoing process of education, of getting information, of research, of delving into stories, of writing poetry. And this is really from last year and everything that's changed, Since that time, we revisited the reading again and said, what's really important to talk about? And so we have a survivor who lived, actually, who was in the Portland Assembly Center. She's in her 80s now, and she's one of the cast members. And she was 3 and a half when she was at the Portland Assembly Center. And then on the opposite end of that, we have 2 10th graders who, in the context of the reading, are learning about this history and actually connecting with some other high school students that are claiming this as American history. And so it just seems like it's a story and it's a history that I'm just always amazed at how many people don't know, even though we've been talking about it and teaching about it and touring about it and making plays and readings. And but there's still people that say, I had no idea that the Expo Center was one of the 15 assembly centers.
Right. It has a different role maybe for Portlanders mm-hmm. nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm curious, I mean, in doing that sort of education through all these different avenues, like you say, are there common misconceptions that you hear or common places where that education is lacking, or maybe something you wish people knew?
A lot of people just don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know what happened to Japanese Americans. And the point is, over 75% were American citizens. They were born here in America. And that was devastating to 41 Japan towns along the West Coast, to over 125,000 people who lived on the West Coast, in terms of losing land, property, homes, communities. And so it really is, I think, in this time, a time for particularly Japanese Americans and any other group that's been through something like this to speak up. And that we have, in a way, some moral authority to talk about this, because we know the trauma. We know what the loss means. We know what it has done to immigrants. And so, you know, we continue to do that.
It's not, I think it's, yeah, important to connect it to the fact that it isn't an abstract idea, and it's not ancient history either. There's a, you know, you're mentioning that there are folks who are still alive that mm-hmm. have that memory of it and are, you know, passing that down. What do you hope that folks get out of the Vanport Mosaic Festival this year?
Well, I mean, I hope they come. Just come, and go on the VanportMosaic.org website, and you can see all the things that are going on. Come to the Alberta House. You can get information there. Definitely come to May 31st and the 1st, not just to the performances, but they're tabling. There are other community groups. There's other resources. There's just a lot going on, and I hope that people will walk away with a sense of history and place, and understanding the importance of those two things, because those are, you know, our history and our place, and root us in who we are and where we are. And I think that I really want them to know about the history of the 15 assembly centers on the West Coast, and Portland is one of them. There is one in Puyallup that became an interpretive center, and now Portland is being discussed what we should do with the 60 acres at Expo Center. So it's a great time to learn the history of this area and of that particular building and Hall A, B, and C that was the Portland Assembly Center, its history and its impact on all the communities that not only were taken away, but the people that were impacted by their neighbors being taken away. And so, yeah, I think it's just a great opportunity to do a lot of learning and building community and learning about people that maybe you don't know about, but you want to know more about.
If our listeners are interested in learning more about the festival or the work that you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way is to go on Vanport Mosaic, a website, and they'll see the listing of everything. They'll see the Portland Assembly Center project, along with We Are Still Here, how to get tickets. Everything else is really a small donation or free. And I would like to say that, you know, during these times, you know, we're a small nonprofit. We're really supported by community efforts and grants, and, you know, we see those drying up. So we just want people to know about what we're doing and come and join us and join the kind of community and learning that we're doing with each other.
Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
Well, I want to go back to and underscore the importance of memory activism, because it really is about having the full knowledge of the history and then being able to relate to that history from your own point of view. And whether you just came to Portland, you've been here, you're new to Oregon, this is a primary source and story of Oregon history. So I think it's a great place to learn about many communities, original communities and communities of color that have been coming together throughout the years and continue to do so, and some stories that probably people have never heard that are based in history and in memory.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to talk with us about it, and congratulations on 10 years of the Vanport Mosaic
Yay,
Festival.
Yay, come celebrate with us.
I have been speaking with Shisao Hata, artist and creative director of the Portland Assembly Center Project. We've been talking about the 10th annual Vanport Mosaic Festival, which kicks off this Friday, May 16th. More information is online at vanportmosaic.org. You are listening to KBOO News In-Depth. I'm Althea Billings. More In-Depth is on the way. Stay with us. You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined today by Laura Grimes, the executive director at Oregon Arts Watch, to speak with me about a few of the recent stories coming out of that publication. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Althea.
Thanks for being here. So lots of interesting stuff that Arts Watch has been covering of late. And some of these, especially the first couple that we're going to talk about, are about the relationship between the arts community and the funding that they rely on. So this first story is from Claire Willett. It's called NEA Funding Hits Oregon Arts Organizations. Grant recipients scramble as promised funding is withdrawn for programs already in motion. What can you tell me about this piece? How is this impacting the Oregon arts community?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, and we talked, a lot has happened since then. On Friday night, May 2nd, people at arts organizations all across the nation started receiving emails that their grants from the National Endowment for the Arts were either terminated or withdrawn. And so I'll explain those two camps. That's basically two different types of letters were received. The terminated grants were for any NEA grants that had already been awarded in 2023 and 2024, but not fully paid out yet. So those NEA grants work on a reimbursement system. So after you do the work and basically spend your own money, then you can submit requests to be reimbursed. So anyone who still had outstanding money was told their grants had been terminated. But what's really important to know is the letters also stated that they could make expenditures through May 31st and then submit a reimbursement request through June 30th. So it's super important for these organizations to know that they can still request reimbursements of funds through June 30th. So I recommend doing that as soon as possible. So for Oregon, we've been able to track down about 74 grants that were awarded in 2023 and 2024 that had been terminated. But some of those, well, not all of them had been terminated because some had already been paid out, but some have not. And so it's kind of hard to track some of those. It involved like four different grant cycles over the couple of years. So it's kind of a long list, and it's hard to track all of them down. But if any had not completed the work, and they can still be reimbursed, what you can do is usually claim that you've been able to do the work so that you've had all those labor costs. There are all kinds of ways to have expenses to be reimbursed for. So the other camp of notices that were received were grants that were withdrawn. And for those notices sent to organizations, they had NEA applications that had been approved or promised, but had not been given the final go-ahead yet. So usually that little final process is kind of even perfunctory. They just sort of make sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and but it doesn't usually affect your funding. Like once you've been told congratulations, you've been recommended for funding, it's usually then just sent through this performa process to get actually reimbursed or to actually be, you know, to be an active grant. So some organizations had received this preliminary approval for funding and had done the work and spent the money, but now they can't be reimbursed at all. And all these were for work that was to begin in January 2025. Usually this was all work for the calendar year of 2025. So they received the notice in early May. You know, there's been 4 months to do some of this work that they were promised the funding for, but then the money has been taken away. So all these organizations could appeal the determination by last Thursday, and many did. But there's no sense at all of whether the appeal process can actually do anything or whether it's just for show. It's actually kind of hard. It was highly recommended that organizations do appeal it, perhaps because a sort of a show of support, you know, it can demonstrate that how many organizations still needed to appeal and say, no, we did qualify based on these new priorities. But it's hard to know whether that's going to have any effect. So for those, the grants that have been withdrawn, we've been able to figure out that there were about 27 Oregon artists and arts organizations were awarded $590,000 in funding in December 2024 that have now been withdrawn. But two of those grants were for literary fellowships that were already paid out. So there's roughly 25 organizations kind of in limbo. It's also, you know, this is sort of part of an effort, like the NEA, it's like the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Institute for Museum and Library Services, which have already been stripped of staff and funding. And there are cuts to entities like the National Public Radio and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Smithsonian, the Kennedy Center. So it's, with all of these, it's basically an assault on the country's arts and humanities infrastructure. There is some ways to get some help. Claire in her story mentions that there's the Federal Readiness and Leverage Fund, which is set up for emergency funding requests for organizations that have experienced significant funding disruption due to federal cuts. Since these stories came out, we have been able to confirm that almost the entire staff at the NEA has been offered buyouts, and likely that whole agency will become significantly smaller or be eliminated in the next few months.
You mentioned a few, but I want to ask specifically, who are these organizations, these arts organizations in Oregon that are being impacted, and what are some of the projects that are ending because of it?
That's a good question. So some of the projects might go forward anyway. Some are already committed to doing that. I mean, they've been in motion. They've done all the planning. So they're making appeals for money and finding other funding sources, or maybe that might impact future programming. So some of them, for instance, Oregon Children's Theater had a grant for $25,000, which was to support the development of a new musical collaboration with Bag and Baggage. And, oh gosh, all kinds. I mean, it's a long, long, long list. I know that the immigrant story, I know that they have storytelling and musical performance in just a couple of weeks. And that was a $10,000 Challenge America grant. And that was their first NEA grant. And the thing is, when you get an NEA grant, it's like you have this national validation that what you're doing is important and that it has an impact on the community. So it's a big deal to get an NEA grant, and to just have it sort of swiped away again is an insult.
Claire Willett has another story out with Oregon Arts Watch right now called Emergency Alert: 6 Action Steps If Your NEA Grant Was Just Canceled. Do you want to walk us through those?
Yeah, a lot of it had to stem from the appeal process, which is already passed. People had until May 8th last week to be able to submit their appeal. But there are a couple of other things people can do. Of course, they, like I mentioned, for ones who had their grants terminated, they could submit reimbursement requests. But also, there's a lot of organizing going on, and there's organizing at the national level. So we're stronger together, as they say. So they recommend that jumping on, and there's a big national spreadsheet that people can do. You can find the links in the story, so you can add your name to the list. And so it demonstrates the whole economic impact of what this means nationwide. It's at least like $5.7 million nationwide for grants that were terminated. So it's important to kind of see that perspective. There's a survey that people can fill out called the National Pulse Survey. It's a document from Americans for the Arts to collect nationwide data. So it helps with their advocacy efforts. And you can contact your legislature. The Arts Action Fund email, which is listed in the story, provides templates for letters and emails to be able to talk to people.
Well, the last story I want to ask you about isn't related to federal funding directly, but it is about a program ending. This story in Arts Watch is by Charles Rose. It's called Music Portland and the Potential Closure of Portland Community College's Music and Sonic Arts Program. The local musicians advocacy group has started a survey to help with students and instructors opposing PCC's proposal to end their MSA program. Get us up to speed here. What's going on at PCC and with Music Portland?
This whole action, it looks like it might be based on future possible funding levels, possibly because of federal actions, like the education department being shut down. So it looks like this might be a proactive stance based from the PCC college's administrators. It's kind of hard to tell, but it looks like they think that there's a threat to budget cuts, and so they're going to close the Sonic Arts program there. The program aims to prepare students for careers in the modern music industry. It shows them skills like engineering and creative coding, and teaches skills even beyond music, such as programming and software design. So closing this program would be a blow to the music industry in Portland, as Charles writes. Program offers courses in, you know, music technology, recording, sort of all the things you need to know in the modern music world, which is a lot of music degree programs are based on classical music. So this really addresses people who have other musical interests and what those might mean. As it points out in the story, the Oregon music industry creates $3.8 billion in economic impact, and that's just in Oregon, more than cannabis, fishing, logging, and the city government of Portland considers the music industry an emerging economic sector. I know that they have wanted to encourage that growth, so it's interesting that a significant piece of it that could be educating people is contracting. Let's see what else I can. So the Music and Sonic Arts Department actually already submitted an appeal, which was due a couple of days ago. And they claim that there's been high enrollment and retention, along with a successful transfer program to Portland State University, which has a similar sister program. The Sonic Arts program at PCC teaches about 200 students, and classes have long waiting lists. I will say, just kind of for any arts, what's really vital about these kind of programs is that it often attracts students who might not fit anywhere else. It sort of captures their attention and retains them. where they might just not fit in anywhere else. They have this sort of, you know, interesting sort of niche interest, and it helps to feed that. They might not, you know, they might not be sort of your traditional student in some ways. So it's important to have these types of programs, any kind of art programs that capture the imagination to retain students. I will say, too, that just speaking of the NEA that we were just talking about, just 2 years ago in 2023, the NEA determined that media arts, which this is a part of, which the Sonic Arts program is a part of, was an under-resourced area for funding, and they actually offered extra grants aimed at shoring up that industry. It was one of the first times that I ever remembered that the NEA actually offered two grants during a calendar year. Usually organizations can only apply for one program, but they actually, you could apply for two if one of them was a media arts project. So the NEA gave priority funding because media arts was considered important and vital and an area of the arts that looked to the future, and they decided that it deserved extra funding. So the fact that that there's a local program that is being diminished is it kind of sad on that front.
And Music Portland is conducting a survey, is that right?
Yeah, so Music Portland has been conducting a survey that's aimed at, say, professional musicians and people around the industry in order to assess, you know, so, you know, what types of experience is necessary. I think that the PCC administration was trying to figure out, so do people need this degree in order to be able to get jobs? Is that a part of the necessary requirement? But a lot of people in the department claim that, well, this is a creative process. It's not, it's an important aspect to arts creativity and knowledge, but actually nailing down whether employers look for that degree is another matter. PCC Sonic Arts Program brings on 19 full and part-time faculty members that would be affected by these cuts.
If our listeners are interested in finding out more about these Oregon Arts Watch stories we've been talking about, what's the best way for them to do that?
You can read all these stories and more at Oregon Arts Watch.